This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Repetition plays a big part in music. Repeated chords or a catchy hook can turn an ordinary song into a global hit. Songs become hits or standards because we like to listen to them over and over. Lisa Margulis, a member of the University of Arkansas's Music Department faculty, has been researching music, the brain, and repetition for her book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind. She recently came to KUAF to talk to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about her book and the different ways repetition in music works.
Sometimes we don't even know how much we're replaying the songs we love until you look at that inalienable record on the iTunes track playlist. Sometimes a sobering sight.
Right. You write that so many of us will say, oh, we listen to all kinds of music. But most, it's like five or six albums really make up the majority of our listening time.
Yeah, I was ashamed when I first looked at my own track play statistics. It's a really good reality check.
So, but there are similarities going on between pieces of music or songs that repeat something and our desire to hear the same songs over and over.
Yeah, and even more than that, the way that we imagine music. So if I just ask you to think about a familiar tune, one thing that can happen is that it can get stuck in your head, right? And that happens pretty frequently. In fact, a recent study has suggested that over half of people had been having songs stuck in their head, you know, multiple times each day. It just seems really widely prevalent. And often when they get stuck, it's not like you're just thinking through the song, which, you know, might be in some cases pretty pleasant. It's that it's a bit of the song that keeps going through again and again as if stuck on a loop. And that's the part that's really maddening for some people. So it's not just the way we're listening to music, the way we're choosing to play songs again and again. It's not just the fact that music itself has lots of repetition going on within the piece already. It's also that if we happen to think about music a little bit, even our thoughts about it tend to be repetitive.
There's the term that's really been popular with music the last five or so decades, the hook, right? We're looking for a hook. Yeah. But there have been hook qualities almost as long as music's been made. I mean, if you hear the opening of Beethoven's Fifth, that's a massive hook, right?
In fact, it's interesting that, I mean, in the first place, it's interesting that music seems to be a cultural universal. That is, there's no known human culture that doesn't make music. It's even more interesting that repetition is an important part of music from all the cultures that we know about. So repetition in music is actually also a cultural universal. And whenever something is entrenched to that degree in so many different kinds of circumstances, it really starts you thinking that there might be something at the level of fundamental aspects of biology or psychology that might be relevant. So this is one of the first kind of observations that intrigued me and made me interested in writing this book. You know, it's you'd think, well, if repetition's such a big part of music, surely there's tons of work about this and we'll be able to understand it from all these aspects. But in fact, it's really been a profoundly neglected subject. I mean, you can go to the New Grove, which is kind of the place to go if you're looking for, you know, the basic encyclopedia of music that people go to, and look at the entry for repetition. And, you know, there's just a couple inches of text and some peripheral sources. And basically the upshot is we don't really know what's going on in this area.
Well, it's at once very familiar, but on the other hand, very mysterious.
That's exactly right. It's so, I think it's one of these things that's so pervasive, you almost forget that it's strange until you really take a look at it. I think another thing that repetition's had working against it as far as becoming an object of scholarly inquiry is that for the longest time, people who were studying music had to kind of prove that it was okay to be studying music. So, you know, they kind of always were trailing behind some other domain, like, oh, well, music is really a lot like language, so if it's okay to study language, it's probably okay to study music, you know. And repetition almost this features that was unique to music and kind of embarrassed people. Like, you know, people felt like repetition is maybe a little childish or regressive or maybe aligned with insanity. There's these tropes throughout history of people looking at repetition as somehow maybe crazy, I don't know. And so I think it took a lot for people to be able to confront repetition in music head on, acknowledge it, and start wondering why it is and how it works rather than just trying to sweep it under the table.
Well, so if you have something that hasn't been studied that much, where do you begin?
That's a great question. Yeah. Well, so basically, in the case of musical repetition, you have a lot of work that circles around it. It doesn't quite get into the grist of the matter, but it kind of rubs up again alongside it. So you can kind of start there. And then the big thing that really helped me was that we have a lot of new understanding about the psychology of repetition in other domains. So there's a lot of literature, for example, on the psychology of ritual, on disorders associated with repetitive behavior. So you could start by looking at all these different domains and then try to kind of draw them into the discourse about music.
One of the more interesting parts, and we've touched on a little bit already, one of the more interesting parts is what we call earworms.
Yeah.
Or I love the German word is stubborn music, yeah. Translates to stubborn music. And why something sticks with us.
Yeah, this is a topic that's just starting to get a lot of attention. In fact, I have an undergraduate who's writing her thesis about, she's trying to understand what kinds of situations tend to trigger earworms. So she's presenting music to people in a couple of different kind of contexts and then having them do kind of a mundane, unrelated task and trying to see which of those contexts can elicit earworms most successfully. But, yeah, and in fact, I've had the chance also to meet some people locally who suffer from, I mean, most of us have earworms that are annoying maybe and, you know, maybe sometimes funny. Mm-hmm. But it can actually, there's actually a really pathological version of earworms where you just constantly have music stuck in your head and you can't ever get it to stop. And that becomes a really different, more serious kind of situation.
Well, it comes to familiarity. And you point out that you could take a famous painting. Say you take Mona Lisa and you black out the upper fourth. Mm-hmm. You know what should be there. But I don't necessarily instantly put exactly what's going to be there. But you use the great example of that Muppet song. And if you hear the first part of it, the ma-na-na-na, everyone who just heard me do that, right, finished up.
Yeah, you're welcome, KUF listenership.
Right.
Yeah, and you know, part of what we're doing when we're listening to repetitive music is we're really invested in the thing that's about to happen next. As evidence of this, I just raise the example of my kids. We used to listen to the same CDs in the car, and they couldn't even enjoy the last 20 seconds of an individual song because they were like, oh, baby beluga's next. You know, they were so committed to the thing that was going to happen a few seconds down the road. And we really listen like that when we know music well. And what that's really about is, you know, in a way, the music has started to play us, in a sense. So it has told us exactly the thing that is going to be coming inevitably out of the sound we're currently hearing. And it just puts us in this different kind of relationship to our acoustic environment. I mean, this is one of the things that separates musical attending from linguistic attending. So this example of the speech-to-song illusion, I think, is really strong evidence.
And what is, I mean, what are we hearing there?
Well, you know, first of all, you're just going to hear spoken utterance, and it's just going to sound like regular speech, because mm-hmm. that's what it is. And then you're going to hear a little bit of that repeated. And then when you go back and hear the original utterance, a really arresting transformation will have taken place. Not for everyone, but for about 85% of listeners.
The sounds as they appear to you are not only different from those that are really present, but they sometimes behave so strangely as to seem quite impossible. But they sometimes behave so strangely. They sometimes behave so strangely. 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 So strangely. So strangely. So strangely. The sounds as they appear to you are not only different from those that are really present, but they sometimes behave so strangely as to seem quite impossible.
Did it happen for you?
It did. Oh, good. It did. And there are some hip-hop artists who have deconstructed sounds like this and say they will put a loop on for a long time and hear, you know, for hours and hear something then that you wouldn't have heard otherwise.
That's exactly right. I mean, that seems to be one of the really basic things that repetition is doing, is that it's shifting your attention such that you're no longer approaching the music the way you naturally would. You're kind of tunneling into some trippy attribute of the sound or going up to some structural aspect. I mean, another great example of this is semantic satiation. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you know about this effect, where if I just repeat a word, so if I said radio.
You keep
radio.
Saying it. And then, at some point, it just becomes this sort of alien word.
Yeah, you think, wow, that A sound is so strange. And
I'll never think of that word the same.
Yeah, you can't. Generally, it's really hard to lose the semantic association of a word, to not hear the word radio and think of this station that we're sitting in or something, right? But that gets entirely suppressed, and you start thinking just about these low-level aspects of the sound. And that's a really great kind of process for music to capitalize on, because often what music wants you to do is listen to those very subtle aspects of the sound, and repetition is one way to drive your attention down to that level.
Well, let me ask you then about this place. I don't know if I'm going to get the pronunciation right. Basal ganglia?
Yeah.
That's in our brain.
Yeah.
What's happening up there? And why does this relate to music?
Right. Well, you can look at what happens when people indulge in repetitive behaviors. So let's take an example of something you might do every night. So maybe you brush your teeth. I guess I hope you brush your teeth. Often you don't really need to think about brushing your teeth, right? It all just happens rather automatically.
You get the toothpaste out of the tube on the brush. There you go.
Yeah, instead you're thinking about an interview you're going to do tomorrow or something, right? You're not really thinking expressly about the brushing. Well, what's happened is that you've really encoded this as an action sequence. And what that means is that you sort of have an entry point to this sequence, and then you have an exit point. And in between the entry point and the exit point, it just churns on out automatically without conscious intervention. And there's a link between the way that's represented and the way, say, a musical phrase is represented. So part of the reasons earworm have such traction is that you can't think of just a little bitty moment of a tune. It has to unfold itself all the way to the exit point, to the point of rest at the end of the phrase. So that's how it can kind of grip you in this way for a certain extent of time. It's because you can't just duck in and duck out and imagine a little bitty moment. You have to kind of play the tune all the way through. It's just chunked together in the way you represent it.
I get the feeling that researching repetition and researching music brings up as many questions as it does answers.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's, it's kind of an exciting time for this kind of inquiry because we have so many more tools available to us in terms of cognitive psychology and neuroscience and so forth to really ask these questions about musical experience that were just not tractable before. Mm-hmm. One of my aims in the book is to get people thinking about these questions and hopefully spur further research.
Lisa Margulis is the author of the brand new book, On Repeat, How Music Plays the Mind, and a member of the University of Arkansas Music Department. She recently came to KUAF to talk to Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums about her new book.